Hello, I'm Pastor Rick, and welcome to our podcast. I hope that the message that you're about to hear will bless and encourage you today.
Thank you, Pastor Evan. I'm excited this morning because I've been looking forward to this Sunday for several months, ever since we were finally able to work it out. We have a guest this morning, friend of Sherry's and mine, in fact, their whole family. We've known them for about 12 years. He and his wife's very first full-time ministry position was with us in Marysville, Kansas. I've watched this young man for the past 12 years grow. He's done ministry in a variety of capacities. Right now, he's at one of our great Springfield, Missouri churches, or I was corrected, Missouri. Which is hard for me to say because I grew up in Ohio and Michigan, but anyhow, Missouri. They are visiting with Sherry and I. We've done some fun things together, and this morning you're going to be blessed. I'm not going to tell you too much more about them because I understand he has some things he wants to share, and he's been threatening about telling you some things about me. And every time he shared an example, it was not flattering. But I love him, and I love his wife, and if it's not flattering, I'm sure it'll be funny. would you give it up for Pastor Donnie Stewart?
Man, Pastor Rick's intros are always so great, and so... I am Donnie. I think we have a picture of my family up there. I have a beautiful wife. That was my high school sweetheart. And my two boys, Obadiah, who's 11, and Samson, that is 8. And man, they keep me on my toes. They teach me how to ollie on a skateboard and how to mountain bike and all sorts of stuff. So it's been a lot of fun. We are from Springfield, Missouri. Missouri is, I didn't realize that the I turns into an A when you move there. And so it's just, that's how you pronounce, yeah, I'm from Missouri. And so that's kind of, that's, I guess, I don't know. But like Pastor Rick said, I was with him. I've been involved in ministry now for a little bit of time, and he was my first pastor that I worked for full time. He took a chance on me, and I'm so grateful he did. I don't know if you know much about Pastor Rick. He's a pretty straightforward guy, and so he's a no-nonsense character, and that's what I love about him, is I don't have to really figure out, like, am I doing this right? Am I doing this wrong? Like, am I hitting the target? What do you need from me right now? And so there's a reason why he invited me to speak and not sing. Because one time he did ask me to start playing guitar, and he clarified. He goes, Donnie, I need you to play guitar on the worship team. I go, great. He's like, but don't sing. Okay. He's like, because I've heard you sing, and it's not a gift of yours. You have other gifts. And I was like, thanks. I still remember one point I was playing guitar, and I'm a very energetic person, and I was playing guitar, and I got into the worship a little bit too much, and he comes up to me. He goes, wow, you're very energetic. Yeah, I am. I thought it was pretty cool. And he goes, were you embarrassed at all? No. He's like, oh, I was embarrassed for you. And I go, oh, okay, thanks. And looking back now, I realized, yeah, I should have been embarrassed. I was twirling around on the stage, and looking back now, I'm like, yeah, I shouldn't have been singing. And yeah, what was he doing letting a 23, 24-year-old do what I was doing? But here's the thing about Pastor Rick and Sherry. They taught us how to love God passionately, how to love the bride, his church, and serve them well. And I've never met a more servant leader than Pastor Rick. He is one of those guys that goes above and beyond and does a lot. He taught me a lot of different things. One, details matter. He wears glasses, but he doesn't need them. He has this X-ray vision. He can see across a room this size a clear mint discarded wrapper anywhere. And he probably has already found 5 of them in this room already just from standing up here. He has eyes like a hawk. And he'll always notice, Donnie, did you clean this room? Yes. Oh, And they'll go over and pick up. I'm like, oh my goodness, how do you see some of these things? Details matter. In fact, not only do details matter, nothing is below him in the terms of serving. When we chased him off from Kansas and he came here, and that's how I view it, is he couldn't handle us anymore. He had to leave. He goes, I've had enough of this guy. And so you're welcome. I chased him to you. But when the last week that he was in Kansas, normally when people check out, and people say, it's my last week. I'll do whatever I want kind of deal. He was got the carpet machine out, and he was shampooing every carpet in the entire church. And he goes, this is my gift to you, so you don't have to do it for another 6 months. Joke was on him. I didn't do it because I kept forgetting about it for the next year and a half. But it was one of those moments where I realized, man, he will always go above and beyond. I can't outserve him, because he'll always be able to serve. And so when most people check out, he will double down. He also, if you haven't heard any of his roller coaster stories, he's an avid thrill seeker. He's not afraid of heights. I'm deathly afraid of heights. And he would always wonder, when I was on the scaffolding 30 feet above, Donnie, why is the scaffolding shaking? Why are you doing this? This isn't safe. And I go, I know, but I tell my legs to stop shaking, and then it won't be a problem. But I can't stop, Rick. He's like, oh, I didn't realize that you were afraid of that. He taught me another thing, that administration is ministry. Administration is ministry. That names remembered are more important than numbers counted. And so one of the things that I'm forever grateful for is he took a chance on me when I had no resume. I had really not any experience, and yet he took a chance on us, and I'm forever grateful. The trajectory of my life and my family's life has forever been changed because of his faith in me and his faith in God to get me through all the other messes. But a little bit about me is the fact that I've been involved in youth ministry now for over 15 years in some capacity, whether it's volunteer or vocation or anything like that. And so a couple things you'll need to know. I talk fast. I apologize. It's been scientifically proven that students have less of an attention span than goldfish, and so I kind of just try and be more energetic than a goldfish. And so I do that. I'm also okay with Snapchat. So if you have your phone and you're Snapchatting, that's okay. I'm used to that. At least you're getting, you know, the background of the church while you're Snapchatting. So that's great. That's great. I'm okay with that. I'm also, I realize that I'm not as cool. Some of you guys will have no idea what I'm about to say. I try using cool phrases and realize I can't. So it's one of those things like, man, this worship set was bussin'. And man, check out the drip on Pastor Evan's feet. And people are like, what is he talking about? I still feel awkward just saying that just right now. So now we're all embarrassed for me together. So, and here's the other thing. Pastor Rick taught me something, and youth have taught me something, that every message needs some good props. And here's the thing about props. It's not Humphrey the donkey, which I was like, of course he would bring a donkey in, like a week before. What? Of course. Like, I will never outdo him with the props. Like, he's a master. I am not. I'll get there maybe one day. But, so balloons. So I got a couple balloons here. And what I love about balloons is, man, they bring a different vibe to the room. They bring something that's unique. They bring something that's fun. They change the atmosphere of the environment. Every good birthday party has balloons. It's just something that I've learned over the time, especially with throwing birthdays for my boys. But here's the thing that I also realized, is not every balloon is created equal. And so, it's kind of embarrassing. Not every balloon can really stand up or pop back up. Not every balloon can really even have the ability to lift other things. Some are just kind of always down on the ground. Now, I don't know if there's any like science majors or anything like that in the room, but there is a difference between it. And here's the thing, it's not that one balloon has a better job than the other balloon. It's not that one balloon just never got knocked down. It's not that one balloon never had had a hard thing or anything like that. It's not that one balloon had a supportive spouse and the other one didn't. It's not that one balloon was really encouraged by their boss and the other one wasn't. They're both in the same environment, same room, and everything. And yet one stays up. And the other one drops. All right, pop quiz. What is the difference? What's inside? Helium is what's inside. And so for us, we look at this, it's like, oh, it's what's inside that makes the difference. And it's not the environment that it's in. It's what's inside. As we talk today, I want to talk about this idea of mental health. I want to talk to you about this idea of living the best life that God's created us for. Living the best life that God's created us for, and a lot of that has to do not with the outside circumstances. Oh, well, if I had that job, well, if I lived there, if I had that family, if I had whatever it is, fill in the blank, if I had that, it would be different. But the circumstances aren't what cause us to live the best life. It's rather what's inside. What's inside of us is what makes the difference. And so we see, even with balloons, that I kind of relate more with the one that's filled with hot air. As you can tell, I'm full of hot air. And so there's this difference that some thoughts and some of our own thinking weigh us down, while the other lifts us up and keeps us motivated, keeps us up. Scripture says that the joy of the Lord is our strength. But there's one of these things that I realized that something that steals my joy more often than not is this idea of bitterness. And bitterness for me, and I'm kind of just going to preach to myself and you guys feel free to listen in. Bitterness for me is often caused by unforgiveness, by this ability to hold a grudge, by this ability to look at others and judge them for the way that they are looking at me. And so today my hope is that we'll leave with this perspective shift. Of whatever our current situation is, the reality is we probably can't change the situation. You can't always change your family. You can't always change your job. You can't always change the circumstance and the situation that you're in, but you can change what's inside of you to cause you to rise back up when you get knocked down. And so for us today, how do we deal with this idea of forgiveness? Because I believe that's the key to experiencing God's best for you. I believe that I'm missing out on living the best when my focus is typically on the wrong aspect of forgiveness. I get caught up in all the caveats, and often I've used, and oh man, this is going to be some marriage counseling for my wife and I. I've used forgiveness as almost this weapon to wield over her and other people. Like I know you guys have never done this. Perfect marriages out there, but for me, it was one of these moments where, we will have a discussion, and one of us will say, "Hey, I'm sorry," and I mean, one of us will say, "That's great, but I don't forgive you yet." What a power move is that? Like, that's great. I'm glad you're sorry. And yes, you are. But I don't know if I'm ready to forgive you yet about that. Like, that is like the ultimate, because I'm feeling like you need to kind of do some more stuff to earn my forgiveness. You need to do some more stuff. And so all of a sudden, I start to kind of wield this over you. And once I have my feelings of the incident disappear, then I'm ready to like, okay, I feel like I can forgive you now. But here's the key that set me free, at least. It was this: forgiveness has less to do with my feelings and more to do with my internal freedom. What's on the inside? Forgiveness has less to do with the circumstance around you changing. Oh, whew, I'm going to step on toes. I'm stepping on my own toes. And it has more to do with the internal freedom of what you're allowing to hold on to you. And so I've heard it one way, that unforgiveness, holding a grudge, is like looking at somebody else through prison bars, thinking, yeah, I'm not going to forgive you. I'm leaving you in that cell. Like, you are not going to be free. And yet, you step back and realize that you are the one that's walled in, that you are the one in the cell. That unforgiveness is like looking at someone through prison bars, thinking they're in the cell, only to walk back and see that you've actually walled yourself in. I put it in my notes this way: forgiveness has more to do with changing my heart than with changing my situation. Forgiveness has more to do with changing my heart than changing my situation. The family is going to still be there. The job circumstance is still going to be there. It probably won't disappear. But how my heart handles it, that can change. And that's what forgiveness has to deal with, more than the other person. And the frustrating part about learning about making forgiveness a habit is then you start realizing how offensive or how offended you always are. It's like when you pray for patience and then all of a sudden you're stuck in traffic and like with kids screaming in the back and you're like, why did I do that? It's not that that actually more circumstances are arising as much as you just notice them more. You start to realize how much bitterness you might hold on to when you think about forgiveness and when you think about some of these things. And so today we're gonna talk through this, but because the reality is, forgiveness, whether you just binge watch Netflix or whether you go to Walmart, which lots of opportunities to forgive people there, you are going to have to deal with forgiveness. Why? Because it's not about the circumstance. It's about what's in between your ears. It's about what's inside of you that makes the difference, that holds you down, that stops you from living the best life that God created you for. And so forgiveness, I put it another way, that forgiveness has more to do with freeing your heart from bitterness than freeing the other person from guilt. It has more to do with freeing your heart from bitterness than freeing the other person from guilt. Because I think if I say I forgive you, that automatically just gives you a pass to do whatever you want. Oh, they're going to forgive me. It's okay. Or it's me admitting that you're that it's okay that you do. We see this all the time, right? Like, when somebody says, hey, I'm sorry, what do we typically say? It's okay. Like, I've worked on this with my boys all the time. Like, they hit each other or something. Hey, you shouldn't do that. Okay, I'm sorry. It's okay. It's not okay. Don't say that. It's not okay that he just punched you in the face, right? And what somebody has done to you is not okay. So stop saying it is. You don't, and I've had to do that with my own habits of saying, oh, it's okay, it's fine, it's fine, don't worry about it. But it's not okay what you did. It's not fine how you just treated me. It's not. But I do forgive you, but it's not okay. So we need to realize that it's not about freeing the other person from guilt. It is about this whole idea of freeing my heart from bitterness. And so the freedom actually comes when forgiveness is offered, not when forgiveness is either A, reciprocated, or even acted upon. Freedom comes when forgiveness is offered. And so for yourself, so what are you doing when you get knocked down, when you get offended? How do we stop the buildup of bitterness in our lives that weighs us down? And how can we rise back up when stuff starts pulling us down? I want to look at this story in Scripture that we see that Jesus talks about. If you've grown up in church, been around church, you might have heard this story. You might be very familiar, and you can probably preach it better than I can. But I want to look at this moment when one of his followers, a disciple, his name was Peter, was asking this question, thinking he was about to get gold stars on his shirt from Jesus. And he's talking about asking about forgiveness, and most scholars say that he wasn't talking about multiple offenses and all this stuff. He was typically talking, they say, about one offense, about this one moment, and how often we have to forgive this one moment. You ever do that? I don't know if you're, man, you might be way holier than me, where I have an issue with somebody, but that issue like keeps replaying in my mind and like replays and replays and replays. And I'm very slow on the comebacks. And so I'll be like next day showering and I'm like, oh, I should have said this. Oh, that would have been a zinger. That would have been great. And what happens is the next day and the next day I keep thinking about these issues. I keep thinking about like, oh, this is. So this is kind of the idea that they're talking about is Peter's asking about how often should I forgive this one person or this person about this one incident. And so it's found in Matthew 18. And then Peter came up and said to him, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as seven times? Now, that's a weird random number. If you know a lot about scripture, you might see, ooh, seven's really cool. The reality is, back in the Old Testament days, there's this Jewish rabbinic law that talked about how you need to forgive three times for one instance. And so you had to keep track, and hey, if it was coming up a fourth time, then you know what? You don't need to forgive anymore. And so Peter, knowing that Jesus always doubled down, like Jesus always like upped the ante and was like, oh my goodness. When he talked about, hey, you shouldn't murder, Jesus would be like, yeah, but you shouldn't even hate somebody because that's like murder in your heart. And it said, hey, don't commit adultery. And Jesus says, yeah, but don't even look at somebody that's not your spouse with lust. And when and the law would say, hey, you need to walk 1 mile. And Jesus said, yeah, but you should walk two. And so Peter was like, oh, I know where Jesus is headed with this one. So as many as seven times, Jesus, I'll even do one more, double, plus one. And he was thinking gold stars. And check out Jesus' response. I do not say to you seven times, but 70 times seven. Huh? He obliterated the expectation. He went way out, and that would be very hard to track 490 times that you forgive this one person of this one instance. That would be very difficult to track that, and Jesus knew that, and he wasn't trying to say, hey, your track list needs to grow way bigger to where you could track it 490 times. But rather, actually, he was trying to get us to a point to understand it's not about tracking your good deeds. It's not about tracking that. It's this whole idea, if you could boil it down, Jesus would say it's less math. Hallelujah. More love. Less math. More love. Stop tracking all the good things that you did to deserve whatever it might be. Stop tracking how great of a forgiver you are, how much grace you've given that person. Stop tracking that. Less math. More love. Less math. More love. Goes on. Matthew 18, verse 23 says, therefore, and he starts to paint this picture, this story. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one who was brought to him who owed 10,000 talents. Everyone's like, what is that? Does that even matter? So the reality is this whole idea of a talent was made up of this money called denarii. Denarii was basically a day's wages. 10,000 talents was 60 million denarii. That's a lot of days. Thankfully, I have a calculator. It's 160,000 years. 160,000 years. So this debt was like unpayable. Unpayable. The reason Jesus used the whole 10,000 talents, he used this word in the Greek, miras, and what it was it was in the Greek language, the highest word, or it was the word for the highest four number that they could think of. It was the highest number that they could think of in the Greek language. That's the word that Jesus used. It wasn't about like the actual number or anything like that. He was trying to say, we don't have a word bigger than that. This guy couldn't owe any more than this because this is the highest word we have. It's like when my son is like, Dad, are we a gajillion bagillionaires? Yes. Yes, we are. I tell him the truth. Because in my mind, that's what we are, because it's a made-up term. So I'm like, yes, yes, we are. It's one of those, like, this is the highest word that we have for the most amount of money. All right, so he said this. The servant responds to him. And since he could not pay him, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and his children and all that he had as payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. First of all, not only has he not gone through like Financial Peace University with Dave Ramsey or anything like that, because he lots of debt, he also is a liar, because there's no way he could pay him anything, right? And so all of a sudden we see that he said, have pity on me and have patience with me and I will pay you everything. And out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. There is nothing that servant could do to pay that debt, to earn that forgiveness. It was the choice of the king to forgive. It was his choice to have mercy on him. And I find myself relating in the sense that there's nothing I can do to earn God's forgiveness of my sin, of my debt. There's nothing that I can do, and some of us might say, well, we haven't done that bad of things. It's not that bad. But the lying, the disrespect, the unkind words, the habits, the hang-ups, there's no amount of good deeds that I can do to earn God's forgiveness. There's nothing I can do, and yet Jesus chose to forgive me. When I give my life, I turn my heart to him. I think when we look at trying to earn, I would have more luck digging to China with a spork than I would earning like my forgiveness from my Heavenly Father. And the reality is we have to come to that. We've been given this great gift of forgiveness, whether we realize it or not. Colossians even says it this way in Colossians 2, says, God made you alive with Christ, for he forgave all our sins. He canceled the record of the charges against us and took it away. How? By nailing it to the cross. Jesus paid the price that we never could. And so I put it in my notes this way. When it comes to forgiveness, I need to understand something. Jesus has forgiven me by no merit of my own. Jesus has forgiven me by nothing I did to earn it, not anything I could do to get it back. I have this unpayable debt that no amount of minimum payments on this credit card of sin will ever make up for. So back to the story. But that is, when it comes to forgiving others, we need to realize how much we've been forgiven. Matthew 18, 28, it says this, but when the same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. Remember, denarii is a day's wage, so 100 days, so roughly, 4 months-ish, right? And all of a sudden, seizing him, he began to choke him. Pay what you owe. So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, have patience with me and I will pay you. Sound familiar? Except for this guy probably could tell the truth because he probably could pay it. He refused and went and put him in prison until he could pay the debt. The servant owed 4 months, which was nothing in comparison to 160,000 years. And yet, I find myself relating to that unforgiving guy way more than I should. Because I realize that Jesus has forgiven me, and yet how often do I honk the horn at the person that just cut me off? Do I try and like get in line in front of somebody that I think has been really been rude to me? How often do I find myself offended by a funny comment that somebody made or a passing jab? And all of a sudden I find myself holding on to resentment and bitterness and relating to this guy way more. And all of a sudden I realize that it's not about my circumstance changing, but it's about what's on the inside. And how do I rise back up? And so one of the takeaways is that I am forgiven, and I have a duty to forgive others. I am forgiven, and I have a duty to forgive others. Otherwise, I look just as weird as this guy was, just as bitter and mean as this guy was. And we look at that, and we're like, how could you ever do that? This guy's an idiot. What is he thinking? And yet I relate to him way more than I want to admit. The story goes on to even talk about how the king found out and ended up taking this man and throwing him in, and it's all based upon his inability to forgive. The king forgave him, but then threw him into prison afterwards. Why? Because the guy had an inability to forgive someone else. Oh, man, I'm forgiven by the Most High, but I have a duty to forgive those that are around me, those that offend me. And so Dietrich Bonhoeffer, this guy, this pastor from Nazi Germany era, said this, the call to follow Christ is the call to share in the forgiving of others. The call to follow Christ is the same as the call to share in the following or in the forgiving of others. And if you're familiar, you might have known the Lord's Prayer, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. So what is forgiveness? What is forgiveness? And it's kind of fourfold here. Forgiveness is canceling a debt. like 160,000 years. A debt that we, you know, what Jesus did for us, it's canceling a debt. It's, number two, an ongoing process. 7 times 70, right? It's less math, more love. Ongoing, not a one-time deal. Number three, it's not wanting ill for your offender. Ooh. Number four, removing the control that the other person has over you. So we're going to hone in on those last two here. And the question is, how do we start? Where do we start? Where do we go from here? Get it. I need to forgive others. You don't understand what that person has done. It's not like they just took a little bit from me. It's not like they just said a mean word and I'm offended. You don't understand how my life has been radically manipulated and ruined because of this person. You don't get that, Donnie. And I understand I am not in your shoes. And so this is where I do think we need to start, though. We need to forgive awkwardly and often. That's a really awkward point to say. But we need to forgive awkwardly and often. Why? Because forgiveness is messy. It's not neat. It's not like, I forgive you. Great. Because people are messy. And people are not neat and put together. It's a messy process to try and figure out how to do this. And honestly, for me, it's not a like, oh yeah, I need to do this multiple times throughout my week. No, I need to do it like multiple times throughout my day, throughout my hour. I need to like constantly. Why? Because I got thoughts that just don't stop, can't stop, won't stop inside this head. And so it keeps going. So I just need to constantly be getting into that mindset of I need to forgive them awkwardly, and I need to forgive them often, because forgiveness is less about being right and more about being free. Forgiveness is less about being right and proving that you're right. And I will forgive you when you admit that I am right and you're wrong. It's less about being right and holding that over somebody. It's more about being free. And that's difficult to do. There's a psychology professor, Dr. Stephen Marmer of UCLA. And honestly, when I read what he talked about, these three types of forgiveness, it brought a lot of freedom to me in navigating through forgiveness. Because I, like I said earlier, I have this view of forgiveness and I typically struggle with it because I see one aspect of the spectrum. And so I'm always looking at this one part. And I feel like I'm a failure because I can't get to this one part when there's actually a full spectrum that I believe that as we look at these three different ways of forgiveness, that it's not necessarily like, oh, I don't want anything on that menu. But there's an idea that, man, we can have not only one, but there might be a couple different ways that we feel and find forgiveness for other people. But before we get to that, I want to say this. What forgiveness is not, and it's this. Forgiveness is not denying that wrong was done. Forgiveness is not contingent upon an apology, even. Oh, I'll forgive you when you say you're sorry. Forgiveness is not forgetting what was done. Well, if you really forgave them, you wouldn't think about it anymore. You would forget all about it. Nope. And forgiveness is not, honestly, always a reconciliation of a relationship. That alone freed me up. Because I go, I don't know if I can even have a relationship with them. And then I go, does that mean I'm constantly living in unforgiveness? But let's get to these three types of forgiveness. And honestly, he's a professor and a doctor, and his words are like way above my pay grade. So I'll say the words for some of you that are also way above my pay grade, but then we'll kind of explain what it is. So the first one is this, to exonerate. And what that typically, or what that basically means, is to wipe the slate clean. Exonerate, to wipe the slate clean. It's usually what I think of, and maybe you think of, when it comes to forgiveness. It's wiping the slate clean. It's typically done like when my kid comes up, hey, Dad, I'm really sorry I spilled all the milk. Hey, you know what? I forgive you, buddy. Let's clean it up. All good. I still love you. It's still great. It's still awesome. It's this restoring of a relationship to the full state of innocence. It's this idea that, you know, it typically happens when an accident happens. It happens with your children sometimes. And then it happens when somebody is genuinely sorry. I am so sorry I offended you. I am so sorry I said those words. You know what? I forgive you. Let's wipe the slate clean. Let's get on. And this is where we see that the slate is clean, the relationship is restored, and guess what? This is what Jesus does for us. This is what Jesus does for us. He wipes the slate clean. He says, you are forgiven. I don't hold the past against you. Behold, all things are new. Wipe the slate clean. Second one is this, forbearance. Big word, forbearance. Basically means to go easy on. To go easy on. It's a process. This applies when the offender makes the partial apology or mingles that expression with somehow blame. You ever do that? Listen, I'm sorry, but what you said, oh man. Hey, I'm sorry, but if you didn't do that, hey, I'm sorry, but it's when the apology is offered, but it's not really what you hope for. I love this. Hey, I'm sorry that you feel that way about what I did. Wait, don't apologize for my feelings about what? I'm sorry. And so it's this idea that it's a partial apology, not even fully authentic sometimes. And I will say, while we need to reflect on our part, if that relationship matters, obviously, we need to work towards over time getting to where we can restore the relationship and wiping that slate clean. But in this, it might take 70 times 7. It might take 70 times 70. It might take a lot of offering forgiveness in our thoughts. And so when I thought about this ongoing to go easy on process, often I want you to feel the shame, to feel the guilt of what you've done, and then I will forgive. I want you to earn my forgiveness. But how can I expect you to earn my forgiveness when God doesn't expect me to earn his? How can I expect somebody that's hurt me, that's belittled me, that's said all sorts of things that I'm frustrated with, to earn my forgiveness when God says, I just want your heart to turn towards me? God doesn't expect me, knows that I can't pay off my debt. So how could I expect you to earn my forgiveness when God doesn't expect me to earn his? Now here's the thing. I don't always need to vocalize forgiveness, but I do need to visualize my forgiveness. I don't always need to vocalize it, but I do need to visualize it. What do I mean? It's awkward to go up to somebody that hasn't said I'm sorry and say I forgive you. What? Like I've tried it before with my spouse. It did not go well. Like, hey, I forgive you. And she goes, oh, for what? And I was like, for being mean to me? Oh, right? Like, it's really awkward if somebody else hasn't offered an apology and you say, I forgive you. So you don't always need to vocalize it, but you do need to visualize it. You do need to say, man, I do. I forgive that person. I forgive what they said. I forgive them. I'm gonna let go of that. Because what's inside of me is more important than what's going on around me. That's why 2 Corinthians 10:10 or 10 verse 5. We take prisoners of every thought, every emotion, subduing them into obedience to the anointed one, Jesus. We take captive all those thoughts. Don't let that stuff just roam around rent-free inside your brain. Take those thoughts captive. Oh, I can't believe that person said that. Oh, this is unfair. This isn't right. Capture it. Capture. Don't let that stuff stick around. Because it starts to build up and it starts to weigh you down, right? And so again, the goal is to lead your heart free from bitterness, not free the other party from guilt. This is similar, the whole forbearance, the going easy on is similar to forgive but don't forget, trust but verify. Something that is helpful in this is forgiveness means freedom from bitterness, not freedom from boundaries. That so often we run back into this same relationship and we get hurt again and again and again and again and again and again. And we get run over and we get honestly abused And I want you to understand something. Forgiveness is not freedom from boundaries. It's freedom from bitterness. And so maybe in some of our relationships, we need to set up healthy boundaries. What does that look like to have healthy boundaries in our relationships, at our job, at our workplace, whatever that might look like with our friend group? What does it look like to have healthy emotional boundaries? Because it's not about, hey, you know what, just say whatever you need to say. I'm just going to be a doormat for you to walk all over. But then there's this third type, is there's cases of forgiveness that are very difficult. They're cases of abuse. There's cases of being cheated on by business partners and friends and relatives that have betrayed one another. And man, family gets really icky and really awkward really fast. And so this third type of forgiveness is release forgiveness. And that is to live in freedom. Do we have any bow hunters? Anyone hunt in here, bow hunters? Good, me neither. All right, so here's what I've learned about a bow. I want to kind of illustrate this. I talked to Pastor Rick. I said, man, it would be really cool if you could stand on stage with an apple on your head and we could see how this works. And he said, really? I said, probably not. So here's the thing that I want to demonstrate. Imagine that this is the target that we want to get. We want to live in freedom. We want to live God's best life, experience God's best life for us. And so we got to get there. And so this is how I just want to demonstrate how we're going to get there. So bear with me here. This is going to be great. And I want to just talk about how we can hit the target. Ready? Ready? You ready for this? This is going to be great. Sorry, Rick. Don't worry. I won't embarrass you again. I know that I have embarrassed you in the past. I have a lot of anxiety about it. It's okay. All right, ready? Here we go. Okay. Don't worry. I got this. Anyone? Well, maybe I don't. Does anyone know what I'm doing wrong? Wow. I need counseling now. Jeez. Anyone want to help me with the first step of everything? What do I need to be doing next? What do I need to be doing here? Pull the rope. Pull the rope. That's cute, but I don't want to go backwards. I'm trying to like get through this mess that I'm dealing with in my life. Like, I don't know if you've ever held a bow, but when you pull it back, there's this weird thing called tension. I don't like tension. I don't like to hold it there. So I get that I need to pull something back. That's not right. I'm trying to move forward with my life and not go backwards. I'm trying to move forward and try to get to where I'm going. So that's cute, but it's not right. So we'll just do this again. Good grief. Okay, so you said pull back. Maybe there is something to that. Okay, so if anyone's shot or anyone seen Robin Hood, you'd know that there's something about this motion, right? Don't worry, I won't aim your way. There's something about this motion. Why? Because when you pull it back, there's a tension. And what happens? There is power in the release. There's power in the release when you have unforgiveness in your life. There's power in the release when you're able to pull back. What does that mean? That means that you just don't sweep the offense under the rug. That means that you need to pull it back and say, God, would you check my aim? What am I aiming at? And all of a sudden, we allow God to check our aim. What happens? We allow God to look at what we're aiming at. We're allowing God, invite God into the process of the tension that we're feeling. We invite God into this process of saying, God, this is uncomfortable. I don't know how long I can hold on to this because I'm shaking now. God, this doesn't feel right to pull backwards and to actually examine what's going on in my life. I just want to move on. And God's saying, you won't ever get to where I'm calling you until you pull back and examine and allow me to search your heart. Allow me to check your aim. Allow me to help you with this whole idea of releasing. Don't worry, I'm not actually going to shoot it. I know some of you are like, can you actually hit that? No, I can't. But there is power in the pullback. There is power in our lives when we decide to say, you know what? I need to understand the power to release even in the middle of a lot of pain. There was one of the biggest lessons I learned about forgiveness came from a student that after a service, she came up to me and she said, Donnie, I know that I've needed to forgive my dad, but now I want to forgive him. And I was a good youth pastor because I kept my mouth shut and didn't say what I was thinking. Because in the back of my head, I was thinking, why? Why? Because I knew that her father, because of choices that he made, caused her and him to live homeless for her junior high career. That he dodged the system so that she wouldn't get into a different home, that she would stay hidden from the system going on, and so that he hid her. And then he would abuse her, not only emotionally, but also physically and sexually. And so she held all this pain and all this sorrow and all this stuff. And I go, he doesn't deserve to be forgiven. He is an evil man. You don't understand. But she got to this point where she goes, I can't hold on to all this weight anymore. She was dealing with self-harm of cutting. She goes, I just have to find a release somewhere. She was dealing with self-image issues. She was dealing with depression and suicidal thoughts. Donnie, I can't hold this anymore. And she recognized that the only way that she could find freedom was in the release of holding her father accountable and saying, he needs to earn my forgiveness. That doesn't mean that he was not accountable to what he had done. It doesn't free him from guilt. It doesn't release the offender from the responsibility, but it can release our hearts from bitterness. The thing that weighs us down and keeps us from living the life that God created us for. And true release only comes by focusing on God instead of our problem. Focusing on God, because when we get to this forgiveness aspect, great, how do we do that? I just got to try harder. I forgive you. True release happens when we stop focusing on the problem and the circumstances around us and start focusing on what's going on inside of us and start saying, God, inviting him into the process. When we change our focus onto God, that's when true forgiveness comes. Remember, it has more to do with freeing your heart from bitterness than freeing the other person from guilt. It's about putting God back on the throne of our heart instead of our pain. Because honestly, I'll just share from my, I kind of like one cheek sneak my way onto the throne and kind of edge God off of it. And so all of a sudden I realize that I'm kind of one cheek sneaking it and saying, hey, and I'm allowing my bitterness and my pain to sit on the throne of my heart. And God's saying, would you allow me to sit on the throne of your heart? Would you get your focus off of yourself, off of the circumstance that's surrounding you? And would you allow me to fill you up to check your aim, Donnie? When we receive forgiveness from Jesus, that radically changes everything about us, and we find peace and fulfillment. But when we offer forgiveness to others, we find freedom and joy. The joy of the Lord is our strength. And release is hard. It's not easy. But there is power in the release. There's power in the pullback. So I'm going to invite the worship team to come up as I read this last verse found in Psalm 139. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way of everlasting life. How do we get to the place where we say, God, I want to trust you completely. God, I want to give my life to you fully. God, I want my focus to be off of myself and onto you. I'm tired of trying to sweep it under the rug. I need to lean into the tension because I realize that there is power in what you're calling me to do. Because at the bottom of your notes, it says this, forgiveness is the key to experiencing God's best for you. Search me, O God, and know my heart. So in these next few moments, what would it take for you to say, God, I just need to take a moment to pull back and allow you to check my aim. Jesus, would you come into my life and forgive me of a debt that I could never pay? Holy Spirit, would you give me the strength to be in the tension and realize that you are all that matters? And in these next few moments, we can get ourselves off of the throne of our heart and get Jesus back on it. so that we can start experiencing God's best for our life. Stop allowing the bitterness that holds us down to rule and reign. Stop blaming the circumstance around us and say, God, it's you and you alone. God, it's you and you alone that needs to be my focus. Would you go ahead and stand with us? And in these next few moments, would you just take the time and just reflect, what is God speaking to you? As you offer up your situation and your issues, what is God speaking to your heart to say, God, I want my focus off myself and I want my focus on you? Let's worship.
Thanks for joining us for this message from Columbus First Assembly. If this message has blessed you in any way, would you share it on your social media feeds so that others can be blessed also? If you would like to join us for an in-person service and you're close to us, we are in Columbus, Indiana, then our services start at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings and our church is located on the corner of 10th and Iowa. Once again, thanks for joining us. Look forward to having you join us again soon.